Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop, it is the buzziest, most popular show on television right now. We're talking about Queer Eye, and we have an interview with one of the show's producers who's going to give us the inside scoop on why the show is such a big hit.
Right now on Inside Pop.
What's up, everyone? I am Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture. We are so happy to welcome back James Barker. If you are an avid listener of our podcast, you may remember him joining us for some music-focused conversations, as he is an incredible DJ, DJ Chaotic.
Whoop, whoop.
But truth be told, he's also a good friend and a fellow producer.
Hey.
Hey, James, welcome back, and we are excited to have you back here to discuss your latest project, the critically acclaimed reboot of Queer Eye on Netflix. Congratulations, James.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Woo! Congrats,
James. Yeah, I got goosebumps with you just saying that. That's such an official introduction.
You are official.
Yeah. You're official.
I know, I'm in LA right now, and I saw our billboard on Sunset Boulevard yesterday, and it felt really official. I mean, it's been out for like three weeks now, but it was quite the sight.
And there's the billboard, you know, the video installation in Times Square too, which is amazing. And like a billboard in Times Square, that's
for
huge.
A reality show. Like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations again on everything.
Thank you.
And I know you are so excited to finally share the show with the world.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start with just the evolution of the new Queer Eye. How is this version different from the original Queer Eye for the Straight Guy that debuted 15 years ago, in your opinion?
It definitely is different purely based on setting. I think, you know, the original creators, Scout Productions, wanted to take it to a new place and have a little bit more depth, and everyone involved like really got behind the idea of making over guys in the South, and not just straight guys, but Southern gentlemen, if you will. And it opened the air for a lot of like different conversations that I don't think people were having in the early 2000s in New York City. You know, like New York City's always been like a liberal hot spot, and it wouldn't have been very weird for five gay guys to help a straight guy out in New York City, because I feel like most straight guys in New York City already have five gay friends at least, you know? So definitely the change of setting just offered up a whole new world of possibilities. And I think you see that with these like sort of I think that's what people are responding to, these interactions that we in our liberal New York City bubble maybe didn't even realize that we wanted to have. And these guys went down to the South and they had them, and they talked to people that, you know, judging a book by its cover, they probably would have been afraid of or hesitant to open up to. And I think it was really special.
So you served as a story producer on this show, correct? So I would love for people,
yes, sir.
And we're going to get all into kind of what you did on the show and how you actually produced. But I'd love it if you could just explain to our listeners what a story producer does, specifically on a show like Queer Eye.
Ooh, I feel like that's like looking behind the curtain. You know, it's like
that's
we're
what we like
Oz
to do
right now.
We're diving inside.
I mean, a story producer. Let me just first clarify, like, I was in post. I know you can be a story producer in the field or in post. Mm-hmm. I personally was in post. And really, a story producer is the person who takes a look at all the footage that was shot for the episode and, you know, sort of decides and works with an editor to put together how we're going to tell that complex, like, week's worth of footage in a, like, you know, 45 minute to an hour range, and sort of like what the emotional arc is and what are the big moments that we need to hit, and sort of just deciding how the story is told. I mean, I guess like it's similar to, I guess, in scripted, it's like a writer of some sort, you know, we're writing with footage that's already been shot.
Right. And just to give the viewers some type of idea, I mean, they shoot hours and hours and hours, dozens, scores, sometimes hundreds of hours of footage that you have to then put into an hour episode.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, like working with Netflix, we didn't have a clock, and you guys being TV people will know that it's small, but it is liberating. And you don't make decisions based on sort of the time limit that you have to tell the story. You know, you sort of spend the time where it's deserved and earned. And to circle back to your like first question, I think something that also makes this different this time around is that the Fab Five spent a week with these guys. It wasn't just like a New York City one day of like 16 hour shooting. It was a week of getting immersed in these guys' lives and really having the time to spend with them and get them to open up in ways that I don't think just one day with a person allows. So,
well, I think that's so refreshing to hear that they had a good period of time with them, and you see that in the show. And it's really important for them to kind of create that bond. And I really felt that watching the first few episodes, that they really do get attached to these guys that they're making over, and they're really involved, and they all make such interesting connections with each one individually, which I really, really appreciate.
Yeah, it's pretty beautiful to like, I mean, I think in general, like what we've not seen a lot of in reality TV recently is this sort of, it's an otherworldly experience for these real life people to have. Like, I mean, you think like if you're living in the middle of Georgia, you're not used to A, like cameras in your face all day, but B, like sort of attention being put on you on like a daily basis. And I think just like having five people say to them like, hey, we're here for you, we're not here for TV or whatever, we're here for you, that alone I think like, you know, put them in a different headspace and allowed for like some really like special connections.
Yeah, very well said.
So one thing that everyone seems to be responding to, James, like I read it in reviews, I see viewer comments, I speak to people in person, is how the show makes them cry, but in a good way. Everybody is responding to that. I responded to that. I was like, I'm not crying.
Yeah.
You know? And then I cried. But what was that something that you kind of set out to do, that you were going to try to go for these very, very big, impactful, emotional moments? Or is it something that you kind of discovered while going through all the raw footage that was shot?
I mean, definitely we approached it with wanting to, like, give the time where time was due. Like I said, with the clock, we weren't really bound to anything. But just a quick side note, like, honestly, like, we were so proud of the show. Like, we knew we were making something special. But there was, like, this little, like, seed in the back of our head, like, right before it came out, that I had some discussions with people I worked with. And we were like, I just hope people don't say it's too earnest, you know? That, like, because we approached it with, like, you know what? Like, let's have these emotional moments and let's, like, really, like, live in them, which is rare for TV. But, like, you just, like, the cynical world that we live in, like, we got a little nervous right before it came out to be like, oh, God, are they going to be like, oh, this, you know, schlocky, Hallmarky stuff? But obviously, we couldn't have done any of that if it weren't in the raw footage to begin with, like, if it weren't how these interactions actually played out with the guys. And I think our showrunner and director who was in the field, Jen Lane, really, I think, shepherded that and, like, spearheaded. She didn't want it to feel like a contrived reality show. She was like, no, we're going to let this play out, you know, as close to a documentary as it can, you know? And I think we sort of took her lead in post and were like, yeah, like, let's just show, granted, there are otherworldly circumstances and they're being put into this weird, like, TV show where they get a makeover, but let the human connections that happen be as authentic as possible. So, and I think that's what people are responding to. And I knew our fears went away the day it aired, or day it went live on Netflix. Of course, I was checking Twitter, and somebody had said, move over, This Is Us. There's a new show in town that's going to make you cry. And I was like, okay, it's not we went the right route.
You totally went the right route, and it's a very good it's a good tweet. Move over. This is us, because I am a huge fan of the show, and it does definitely make me tear up. And so did, you know, the first few episodes that I saw of Queer Eye. I will say I watched it once, and insider info, I happened to be talking to you while I was watching it, and I told you everything that I felt. I gave you an ongoing commentary of my feelings of it while I was watching. But I ended up making my family watch, a few cousins of mine watch, just a week ago. And they were all kind of just like, I was like, have you seen the new Queer Eye? And they were just like, oh, I don't know. And they were like, I kind of remember the show. And there's two millennials, they're 25 years old. They're like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that from a long time ago. And I was like, yeah, it's different. You have to watch it. My friend worked on it. And I'm super proud of it. And like, I saw the evolution of them watching the first episode. And, you know, they were just like sighing and they were awing. And when he was at the end, Tom, right?
Yeah.
And Tom was at the end and he said, I said you couldn't fix ugly. And that just that phrase of fixing ugly that he kept saying. And when he got emotional at the end, like, I swear to you, they all looked at me and they were just like, this is making me get teary. And I was so excited. I was really happy about it. I was like, yes, this is what it should be. Like, you want people to feel something, you know, because what are you doing it for? You know, like, why are you going into these guys' lives and doing all this stuff to help them feel better about themselves if it's not going to really like resonate with the audience that you're making it for? And it just made me feel so proud for you and the show, knowing that it affected them. And then they got hooked into it. They could not, like, we were all like, we have to go home, we have to go to sleep. And they're like, no, well, now we need to see the second episode, because the second episode is an Indian guy. And I was like, well, you guys got to see the second episode. You know, because that obviously was just like, they were super into that, you know?
Amita's so, taking credit for your success, James. I don't know if you hear that in what she's saying, but she's saying that she's spread the word about
she
it.
She is
so.
Sharing.
Yeah.
I'm spreading the word for sure. I'm telling everybody.
Girl, spread the gospel, preach it out to the world.
I will.
No, I love it though. Like, the nice thing about the first episode is that, I mean, obviously Tom is just a great guy to start with because he's so open with them and has such a huge heart. And I love it too because that literally is the first episode we shot. They didn't, you know, order changes all the time when the episodes are sort of like self-contained. But like, tried and true, that was the first episode that was shot, and I think it just plays well as an introduction of what's to come. So,
definitely, I agree. Yeah. So we're talking about how emotional this is and how it's causing tears. So what's it like for you when you're in edit, James? You know, from that first time that you see that raw footage to probably 100 times later when you're delivering the picture lock. Is there a range of emotion that you go through? Are you always feeling emotional? Do you kind of distance yourself at some point? What happens for you?
I mean, obviously when you're watching the raw footage, you're looking for the moments that make you feel something, like whether it's a laugh or like an inspiration or tears as it happens in Queer Eye. But yeah, you're obviously on the lookout for those. And then at a certain point, you get focused on, okay, how do we bring that and make the most impact out of it? And I think, like, in that part of the process, you are not having the reaction yourself, but more trying to, like, figure out how to deliver that same reaction to everyone who's going to watch and make sure that it hits how you intend for it to hit. But certainly, like, you know, we finished the season like a while back, before Christmas, definitely. And to get to watch it again with sort of fresh eyes and experience it with everyone else, like, certainly when, you know, the end of episode one, when Tom says bye to the Fab Five, like, I still get misty eyed. Like, he's so raw and sweet and pure that, yeah, I get swept up with it, because I'm not looking for notes right. to give or right. music cues to change or what right. have you. But I think too, as far as like making the show, like, the editors I worked with were like insanely talented, and everyone approached the project, with this just like in desire to make it as good as it possibly can be, you know, like in TV, we always deal with like tight deadlines and, you know, shrinking budgets and all the stuff that sort of works against you making the best quality product that you can. But the one thing that, regardless of any odds that may have been stacked against us, that we all had in common is that we just wanted to deliver something as good as we knew it could be. Because, like, I mean, you watch that first week's worth of Raw footage and you can't not be inspired to be like, oh, we're working on something really good and something that, like, you know, without sounding pretentious, is like important. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think needed to be out in the zeitgeist. And that carried us through a lot. And I think everyone sort of approaching it with that mentality, you know, just it helped, you know, make sure that people are having the reactions that they're having to it now, which, I mean, still on a daily basis, I'm checking Twitter just to see, mainly because the responses are so lovely and it's touching people in, like, really cool and unique ways. And it's just a really great thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I think you hope for and dream of as a producer, to do something that will have an impact on people. You know, entertainment, I think, is super important, but it's also nice to know that you're also doing something meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, look, I love a good Yas Queen joke, but the fact that I can get that and also, you know, some sort of like mutual understanding, I think is, I mean, it's a blessing.
For sure. I want to dive into an episode I think a lot of people have been tweeting about, episode 4.
Yes.
With AJ.
I know. Just like a little asterisk note. I personally did not story produce this episode, mm-hmm. and I would not want to take credit away from the amazing team who did. Obviously, I was there through the entire process, but it is not my personal episode. But big up to Christina and Joe and Amy and the whole team who did craft that beautiful episode, but I really want to talk about it, so let's do it.
Okay. Well, we should talk about it because, you know, the original concept of the series was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. This is now called Queer Eye, and this episode is probably one of the reasons also that, because they're not all straight guys. Episode 4, the subject of episode 4 is AJ, who was gay. So it was an interesting twist on the original concept, and it is an episode that he came out to his family in, which I thought was extremely moving. I have to hear what you guys think of it.
I mean, yeah, selfishly, I want to hear what Sean has to say about it first.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, listen, one of the things that I absolutely love about this new version of Queer Eye is the fact that you get to know about the hosts more than you did in the original version, right? So you get to hear them every once in a while mention what's going on in their personal lives. And so I love the fact that they get to be these fleshed out, you know, quote unquote characters. And so I love that sex is mentioned sometimes. And I love that race in this episode is mentioned, just to allowing everyone to be fully fleshed out. And so that was really touching to me, really touching to me.
I'm glad. Yeah. I think there is so much about the AJ episode, I think, just as a gay man, that I knew was important, and like working, you know, alongside that team that was crafting it, you know, the story producer on that episode would like ask me questions about like my perspective as a gay man and how I feel about, you know, sort of like internalized homophobia and like this like need to be masculine, even though like we're out and proud and open. And I think, you know, in my younger years, I definitely like saw a lot of myself in AJ with that, you know, yes, I've come out of the closet and yes, I'm gay, but like, I still don't want to be like that gay. You know, I don't want to be Queenie. And I definitely had to have that like reconcile moment with myself where it's like, you know what? Like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to be as masculine or as feminine as I want to be or just am naturally, because that's me. And I don't need to like assimilate or be one specific way. And so that part of AJ's story I personally like really responded to, because I know what that struggle is like. And then, you know, to get this perspective from Karamo and AJ about like what it's like to not only be gay but also to be like gay and black and living in the South, you know, it's obviously not my experience, but like what a great like conversation to get to see like played out between like, you know, sort of people that are at two different points in a very similar journey, and how, you know, you can, it's okay to like have those discussions and like be, and you know, and to grow from it. You know, like it's not like you come out of the closet and suddenly like someone hands you like a driver's license to Gayland and you're like, God, great, I got it. You know, it's like it's a constantly like evolving process, and you know, being a part of the queer community, I'm still learning more and more to this day, you know, and I've been out since I was 18. So to get to see that on, you know, what I guess is global television, because Netflix is all over the place, is really, really cool.
Yeah, and it shows the diversity of the queer, even using the phrase queer community, it's that's a big umbrella. And, you know, I think that you have, you know, Jonathan and AJ, and they're, you know, they're definitely part of the same umbrella, but it's a pretty wide umbrella, you know, and I think that's beautiful to like to show the diversity of our community and to celebrate that and to even, you know, work through, you know, some of the challenges of that.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, I think that stems back to like, even with the casting, I mean, the casting of the Fab Five, like aside from the straight guys or the heroes that we make over the course of the show, the casting mm-hmm. of the Fab Five was so on point this time around. I thought, not that it wasn't originally, the original Fab Five are freaking amazing and legendary, but there was something about this sort of broader spectrum of the masculine and feminine, you know, point of view, and the fact that like we got some like different just cultural perspectives like within the Fab Five, and then, you know, adding that on top of the fact that we do get to talk about their personal lives more and they get to be more like well-rounded like humans as they appear on television, I think it just informed the environment to everyone got to bring their own perspective to the table. I think that's really what it comes down to. And I think there's, you know, there's so much more, like, you know, I sit in footage with these guys, so I feel like I know them like the back of my hand and like they're my best buddies. And there's so much more that they have to share and so much more knowledge and experience that they have to bring to the table that I just like, I really hope we get to continue on for seasons and seasons to come, because I think the more that they can share with the world, the better off we all are, you know? And I think that goes for people outside the Fab Five too. I think just in general as humans right now, in the crazy, crazy world that we live in, the more we can share about our own experiences and how they make us feel and how we overcame things and how we face our new challenges, the more we'll understand each other and the more we can come back to each other. That sounds really hippy-dippy, but I really mean it.
No, I've said that. I've said those exact words on this podcast before when I've, you know, we've shared some things between us and with our listeners. So yes, I 100% agree.
And we know that you're in Los Angeles, James. So if you're getting a little bit hippy-dippy, that's probably why.
Yeah. And I'm from Colorado. Oh, and I live in Brooklyn. Like hippy-dippy is second nature, girl.
Check.
Yeah. Also, side note, before we move on from AJ, they did just announce that AJ and his boyfriend got engaged.
I just saw that on Twitter.
That's
yes, amazing.
It's
so exciting.
Yeah. It's awesome. So, you know, congratulations. If they're listening to Inside Pop, which obviously they should be.
Of course.
Congratulations.
Yes,
that's amazing. And I mean, how special is it that because of the show, most likely, he'll have his family at that wedding. That's amazing. That's I mean, it is life changing.
I mean, his stepmom was so lovely. She was so lovely. And her reaction, like, what a, like, I mean, if they're going to give like a textbook how you're supposed to react to your son coming out, mm-hmm. like, watch that episode, see what she does, and just love him that way. Yeah, I think that'll be a beautiful wedding, obviously.
Yeah. No, it was so beautiful.
I mean, we've been talking a lot about the tears and the emotion. I also just want to shout out how amazingly funny your hosts are and how smart they are. I think in order to be really funny, you have to be really smart. And they are just so whip smart. I think it's the kind of that gay wit that I've been missing on TV. I love it. It's phenomenal. It makes me so, so happy.
it's amazing too, because I love that they could be that like unabashedly funny without being like mean-spirited or snarky. Like it is such like joyous humor, and it comes from this like really, like, smart and beautiful place that, yeah, I think it's really special. And they definitely, I mean, the amount of jokes and, like, one-liners that are left on the cutting room floor, I mean, you could make probably an entire other episode out of the stuff that we didn't use that is just as funny, but just didn't serve the bigger purpose of the story, you know?
Can I produce an outtakes episode? I would love to see all that.
Right? Like, that's, I mean, like, I was so glad, like, obviously we did the hip tips at the end of the episodes. And I think, like, one or two episodes has outtakes instead of hip tips. And it's not because we didn't shoot hip tips for those episodes. It's just that, like, we could not bear to let go some of the amazing, like, jokes or footage that were, like, in the... that we wanted so desperately to be in the episode.
I love it.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jonathan is hilarious. But what I love... Obviously, he's, like, this soundbite machine. Mm-hmm. But what I love, too, is that, like, everyone really gets their moment. Like, I mean... The guys who aren't necessarily, like, the one-liner machines, like, they're, like, you know, they're whip smart, too, and they're, like, throwing out jokes left and right. It's just a really cool environment. And I think they all approached it with, like, a total lack of fear, and they just went out there and just were themselves. And, you know, and I think that shows in the edit, too, because, like, they weren't trying to be anyone but themselves, and therefore we... got to present the best version of themselves in the edit.
Yeah, I totally felt that. I really did. I feel like I know all of them individually and I know who they are. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel affected. Like, it was who they are.
I mean, like, I think, like, Anthony and Tan had, like, less than, like, 2,000, like, Instagram followers when the show went live. And now they're both, like, at 200,000 or more. Mm-hmm. Like, clearly people are responding to them and wanting to be their friend and know more about them and follow them. So, yeah, it's awesome.
That's awesome. So moving...
I keep using words like that, like awesome or rad. Or, that's just how it feels. Like, for the last 3 weeks, Groovy. That's all it's been. Yes, groovy.
So moving beyond the Adri episode, are there any other episodes, James, yes. that you worked on that maybe you can kind of point out something that our listeners should look for when they're watching the episode? Are there any moments that you're particularly proud of that you'd like to discuss?
Okay, so I worked on the season premiere with Tom Jackson. And then the other two episodes I did in season one are... Below Average Joe, which is episode number 7, and the season finale, The Covington Fire Department, lovingly titled Hoes Before Bros. probably one of my favorite episode titles of all time.
The titles, for everybody should listen to all the titles. The titles are amazing.
That was not myself, that was Jen Lane, but absolutely hilarious. One thing I would say definitely to look out for when you're watching is in the Below Average Joe episode. It's definitely not the emotional tearjerker episode. He's a stand-up comedian. He lives at home with his parents. It wasn't going to be this, like, you know, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus moment where, you know, we weren't going to get that. But what we did get, which is like a complete surprise to everybody involved, is at the very, very end of the episode, the last, like, 2 minutes, basically Joe puts his newfound swag into action, I guess? Like, I don't know. I guess, spoiler alert, don't keep listening if you don't want to hear what happens, and just go watch the episode. But now that we got that out of the way, the whole time he didn't have a girlfriend, and he was talking about how he was unlucky in love and, you know, still lived at home with his parents, so he couldn't really get a dating life. And then after his stand-up show that goes swimmingly, and he was honestly, like, on point and hilarious, way more jokes that we didn't even get to use in the edit, but he, you know, chats up this girl that he seemingly knew a little bit or was familiar with, and then planted a kiss on her at the bar. And watching the Fab Five react to that, because honestly, no one had any freaking idea that that was going to happen, but watching them react to that in this, like, sort of just huge outburst of joy is probably one of my favorite moments in the show. And aside from that, in the fire department episode, when Karamo takes the hero on his field trip to learn ballroom dancing with some of his fellow firemen, and Jonathan and Tan is I think, comedic gold. Like, I know how we crafted that scene. I know every, like, beat of that scene, and I still laugh out loud every time I watch it. It's just great to see, like, three, four burly straight men dance with, like, some amazing gay men in a ballroom dancing class in Atlanta, Georgia. Like, there's something about, like, my, like, gay heart that swells with happiness when I get to see that, because it just shows that, like, you know, if there are still straight men out there who are afraid of gay men, like, get over it. It's fine. Like, you know, you can dance with us and we're not gonna be inappropriate.
Yeah. I think also what stood out to me was, like you had said about, but not your average Joe.
Below average Joe, yeah.
Below average Joe.
Yeah.
That, you know, he gets this confidence and is able to plant this kiss on this girl. And I think that is something that all of the hosts are so great and really, like, careful about, but really insist that these men find their confidence. And they work with whoever they are as people and be like, well, you're, you know, and find and figure out how they've lost it and figure out how to get it back. And I felt that a lot with Tom Jackson. You know, I think, you know, Jonathan did such a great job explaining that to him when he was giving him, you know, his beard trim and his haircut. And he was just like, that's the difference. And you've lost that confidence, but it's not like it's lost forever.
Yeah.
And your host does such a great job of really tapping into it, getting on a level with them to really help them find that, which is the heart of what they're trying to do here. You know, that is the makeover, right?
Yeah.
Like, your guests are doing all these things that are like the facade of, you know, their outfit and their hair and their skin routine and their food and their home. But it's the inside that I think... I don't feel like I got that as much in the first iteration of this this show in back in the early 2000s. And you feel it so much more with this one.
Yeah, it pointed out to me something that I hadn't been able to put my finger on before. But I think most of the time our insecurities tell us that other people are going to be... or other people have the easiest time spotting our weaknesses, right? And therefore, our insecurities tell us to hide those weaknesses and to, you know, bury them or do anything with them other than to show them to other people. But I think what the Fab Five are doing, and what I think, like, we can all take away from a show like Queer Eye, is that other people are actually more likely to see the good in you as long as, like, that's how you're approaching, like, how you're coming to the table. So if you come with, like, this is who I am and I like me, then other people are going to find that good in you too. And I think sort of the Fab Five being put in these situations with these, like, guys who maybe had lost their sense of self or their confidence, the fact that they can show them, like, hey, these are all the good things I see about you and you need to see them about yourself. I think that is probably the most special thing about the whole show, is that we could all use that lesson. Like, I know that, like, I mean, we're friends in real life and, like, we have this, like, group of people in New York City who are constantly reminding each other about the good they see in each other. And I think, you know, what better way to go through the world than with, like, five gay guys who just tell you you're fucking awesome all the time. You know, obviously not lying to you. You just are fucking awesome. And we should all know that.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen. James, you are a producer on one of the most, like at this moment in time, like maybe the most buzzworthy show on television right now. I guess we'll still call Netflix television.
I wish you guys could see my face because that feels so weird to hear. But it is. I mean, it's
fun. Yeah. How does that feel? I mean, it is the, like, it's the it show now.
I mean, it feels awesome. We had a little post-wrap party last week, and it just felt really good to come back together with all the people that we made the show with and sort of, like, hug it out and celebrate it together, because you guys know when you work in TV, it's never, like, a one-man job. It's never one person who did something that made it a hit. Like, it's this weird project that, like, so many people bring their A game and their best to, and you're just lucky if you get out a response like the response Queer Eye is getting. So, I mean, I definitely feel lucky to have been a part of it. I'm certainly freaking proud, because not only is it a show worth being proud of, but I did like push really hard to get onto it. I mean, for at least like 3 months, it was like a daily to weekly, like sort of, hey, I know it's coming and I really want to be a part of it. And so then to not only have been given the chance, but to have it be as well received as it is, just as like a really like, it's a special moment in life and career, you know?
Yeah. Enjoy it. Enjoy it every second.
Thank you.
Of it.
I'm trying.
You deserve it.
Yeah. I feel like my Instagram followers are probably like annoyed as crap by now, but like, sorry, I'm going to be talking about Queer Eye for a long time.
As you should. I'm not annoyed. I follow you. I'm not annoyed.
Yeah. And it's 2018 when self promotion is mandatory. So get used to it, everyone.
Yeah. Right. Get used to it for sure.
Well, James, I'm also very grateful and excited that you were able to come on to our show to give our listeners an inside peek at Queer Eye. I think it's really special to have someone who's worked on the show provide insight. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me and for watching the show.
Aww, thanks, James. I'm going to actually finish now and watch the last few episodes because I can't wait to see the firefighters. And
I can't wait. And you and I both worked with Matt Miller in the past.
Yes.
And really, like, what Matt Miller brought to that fireman episode is, like, next level.
Oh,
like,
I can't wait.
And especially the one thing that we didn't talk about too that I think was really cool about this new version of Queer Eye is that we got to play with like lyrical tracks in music, which you don't get to do a lot of times in reality TV. And to get to see like Matt Miller in particular in that episode, what he did musically is, I mean, beyond. It opens with one of my favorite music gags of all time.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Matt Miller is an editor, if we haven't gathered from what we've just been discussing.
Yeah. I had to give a little shout out to Matt Miller because he is, I mean, he and I, the episode, other than the season premiere, all the episodes I worked on, he was like my lead editor. And so we went through the trenches together and, he made me better, and I hopefully was able to like bring a little bit to the table with him. So
cool.
It was really
I'm
cool.
Sure you did, and Matt is awesome, and he's a musician himself, so I think that must have been so much fun for him to really work with music in a different way. So I'm so excited to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, James.
Thank
you. We really appreciate you taking the time and talking about this awesome show. I think anybody who's listening to this who hasn't watched it, stop your podcast now. Go watch Queer Eye on Netflix. There are 8 episodes. They're amazing. Get a box of tissues and a bowl of popcorn. You're going to love it.
Yes.
And wine.
clearly.
I actually highly suggest watching with friends.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, you know, I've watched it with my boyfriend. I've watched it alone. But I think definitely, like, group viewings are the way to go. The jokes are... You know, the jokes have more impact, and the discussions you get to have after are beautiful. And, you know, like I said earlier, just tell your friends how freaking awesome they are, because everyone deserves to hear it.
I love that. Will do.
What a great sentiment. You're awesome, James.
I love
you. You're awesome,
mwah,
Sean.
Mwah, mwah.
You guys are the best. I love you both.
Back at you.
We're going to take a break, and we will have more after this short message.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts, only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who Shot Ya? The podcast that dares to say that white dudes' opinions aren't the only opinions.
If you have a movie pass, like, get a ticket to it to support Taraji, then go home.
Ant-Man seems so unnecessary at this point. Ant-Man is like a ketchup packet too many.
Who Shot Ya? With Ricky Carmona.
I wanted to see Wolverine kick ass and eat some popcorn and have a good time.
Alonzo Duralde.
Is this Andy Richter?
Yeah!
Oh my God!
And April Wolf.
I love Wild Things because I get to see Kevin Bacon's dick.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love it.
Oh, good stuff. Man.
every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast, too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All Right, that's enough.
The Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
Okay, well, that is it for this special episode of Inside Pop. No Big Sell this week, but the Big Sell will return next week with my review of Amita's Big Sell from the previous week. Also, a very, very, very special episode. What's happening next week, Amita? I think there's like a little like award show or something. I can't tell you what.
Oh, is it the 90th annual Oscar Awards? Yes.
Bum, bum, bum. That is right. The moment, the night we all live for. It's the Oscar Awards. And Amita and I are going to stay up late. We'll probably tweet during the show. So check us out on at Pop Insiders on Twitter and Instagram for our live tweets from, not sadly, not from the Oscars. We will not be in the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, but we will be in our living rooms, respectively, tweeting about the Oscars, and then we're going to jump in front of our mics at 4 a.m. when the Oscars finally end, yeah. And we'll record our episode, and you'll get it in your feed.
Yeah, hopefully they read all of the winners correctly this year, and we'll only be discussing winners, snubs, and fashion.
Yeah, I have one dream, which is, can we keep the moonlight jokes to a minimum? That's all
yes,
I ask.
Please.
It was a painful moment. It's not a laughing matter,
no.
But I bet there will be some moonlight jokes.
I'm sure they will be. And as always, stay in touch with us as well, not just when we're live tweeting the Oscars, but let us know how you feel about Queer Eye. Let us know how you're feeling about Black Panther, because we'll always keep talking about that. And just, you know, say hello. At Pop Insiders, Twitter, Instagram, go on Inside Pop on Facebook. Head over to InsidePopPodcast.com. Check out old episodes. Find out more about us. And go over to MaximumFun.org.
And then go to iTunes, and you can subscribe there. And take a moment to give us a rating and a review. That always helps for others to find this little podcast of ours. So, good luck in your Oscar pools. I know I need it. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.